Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we visit from our Milwaukee studios, as a matter of fact. With us, Dave Wanniger, horticulture in charge at the Berner Botanical Gardens. He's going to talk about the recent snow and cold and take your gardening questions. So, did the snow do any damage in your garden? What gardening questions do you have? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Dave Wanniger, welcome.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate you taking the time. You know, the Berner Botanical Garden's been around a long time. A lot of people know about it, but there are probably people listening who don't know, quite a few. So talk about the garden and what it's about.
Sure, Larry. The gardens are just a jewel. They were constructed in the middle of the Depression in the 30s. Charles Whitnell got a vision for building some kind of botanic garden, you know, a garden that could showcase plants that people could go visit for beauty and then also for learning how to use in their own homes. Businesses could learn, you know, for landscaping. So it would be a great civic, just a wonderful civic thing. So he got that idea. And then this is the middle of the Depression, and we got WPA, that's Works Projects Administration, that Depression project.
Yeah.
We got workers from that, skilled workers who could do stonework and metalwork. And then we got a CCC camp, Civilian Conservation Corps, is another Depression era program. And then we got 250 16 to 18-year-olds out there, and they were the mules. They were the people who dug the holes and moved the stone and dug out the lakes.
Man.
And so the combination of those two things just gave us this just jewel of a botanical gardens. Little thing about it, in the 50s, when color TV was just coming on, NBC set a semi-truck out with their brand new color TV stuff. They went to just a couple places in the nation, Busch Gardens and Berner Botanical Gardens.
Wow.
They have all the places they go in the country. They decided to come here. So I'm just so proud of something like that. And I'm really honored to try to keep that tradition alive.
Yeah, it's been beautiful. How many acres have you got out there?
The formal gardens themselves probably only go about 7 acres, 6 or 7. But the whole gardens, when we have some of our magnolia collection, ginkgo collection, conifer collection, things like that, the rest of the gardens, probably about 30 or 40 acres.
Yeah, it is a gorgeous, gorgeous spot. I had the privilege to broadcast from there once, and a long time ago now, but I didn't forget it, and it was a lot of fun. Well, here we are. If you went over to Berner Gardens today, and if you looked practically anywhere in Wisconsin, you're going to see that. Oh, a lot of snow fell here over the last week or so. And this is kind of an unusual, you know, it's early. It's early, and for parts of Wisconsin at least, it's very early. What effect does this snowfall have on gardens?
Well, in most cases, really, it doesn't have a whole lot of effect, fortunately. It can keep you from getting in and doing the rest of your garden cleanup, although garden cleanup, I think, is sometimes overrated. It's nice to leave the flower heads there for bird stuff, scavenge off in the winter and things like that. And cleaning up too much in the winter sometimes doesn't protect the crowns of your perennials as much as you'd like. So if you can't get the cleanup done because of the snow, that's okay. Sometimes, especially with the snowfall like we had today, and then we got 19 degrees wet snow, 19 degrees the next night, sometimes you can have some icing possible. And that can sometimes give you problems with tender stems of like young woody plants typically. Usually that is not a problem, though. Typically it's not a big problem. Another problem it might be is, geez, can't get you still got those tulip bulbs. You bought those bulbs on sale, and you got to get those tulips in the ground. No problems. Just shovel the snow off the soil, and you can plant anyway, even with the snow.
Yeah, as long as the ground's not frozen, and you don't need a pick.
And the snow will help insulate the ground for a little while.
Oh, yeah. Man. Well, we've got callers online with questions for you already, so well, let's take a call. Laurel in Coleman will give you a chance. Hi, Laurel.
Hi. My question is, I have these fire shrubs. Is that what they're called, where they turn real red?
Burning bushes, sometimes they call them.
Burning bushes. And mine don't turn as red as most people. Can I add a fertilizer, like in the fall and spring or something, to add to the soil to make them redder? The soil is kind of sandy because I'm near a lake.
Yeah, sorry to say, I don't know of any fertilizer or any kind of soil amendment or anything you could spray on them, for that matter, that would get them to turn better. Sometimes it's just a genetics thing where some burning bushes get nicer and brighter than others. Sometimes maybe they're in a little more shade. A lot of times shadier conditions prevent them from getting as red. So I don't think there's a whole lot you can do in terms of like a fertilizer amendment. Yeah. Possibly just making sure they stay well watered if it's a real sandy site. But I don't think that that would really tend to affect fall color a whole lot.
So there you go, Laurel. Sorry. Or maybe chop down the tree that's right next to the bush.
If they're getting shaded heavily, yep.
You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Marsha in Mineral Point. We'll go to you next. Hi, Marsha.
Hi there. I am one of those people that has a lot of daffodil bulbs, tulip bulbs, etc., hosta plants that I had ordered from Breck from Holland, and they are on their way, and they haven't arrived yet. So I've got about 500 worth of planting. So it's kind of a big project. I'm just wondering if you have any advice for me.
As long as the ground is not frozen, you can generally get away with planting. I'm guessing these things will – I'm not positive. I'm guessing they'll be shipped bare root, meaning they're not going to have pots. They're just loose in the soil. So long as the soil is still workable, you should be able to do pretty well with planting. The trouble I see, though, is they're not going to be rooted into the ground very well, and we get freeze-thaw cycles during the winter. So get them in the ground as soon as they come in. Hopefully the ground's not frozen yet. But if you have some mulch on the ground, first off, if you put a little mulch down now, that might insulate the ground and keep it from freezing quite so quickly. But especially after you get those things planted, make sure to mulch them well. Otherwise, what will happen is that the freeze-thaw cycles, as we get a freeze and then a thaw over and over again during the winter, it tends to push those plants right out of the ground, expose the roots, and then they tend to dry out going into the spring.
You know what I might do, and maybe tell me if I'm wrong on this, Dave, but if I was in Marsha's shoes, I got 500 of them to plant, maybe I dig the holes right now. Would you dig the holes now, or would you?
The only thing I worry about with digging the holes now is we had 19 degree weather this morning, and look at your 10-day forecast. And if you can, and if you're convinced that we're not going to get enough frost, real good hard frost at night that the ground freezes, I think you could start prepping out your holes right now, prepping out your areas right now. I do worry if they're not coming right away. By digging the holes, you could invite a little more frost into where that planting spot is.
Okay. That makes some sense. Marsha, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or go ahead and email us at ideas@wpr.org. You know, there was some heavy snow in parts of the state. I know there were some – I saw in one of the neighborhoods I drove through a branch, broken branches off a tree. If you've got broken branches, what should you do?
Well, first off, we happens all the time at the gardens for us. Our first consideration is safety. When a branch breaks, a lot of times if it's hanging from the tree, you don't necessarily want to – show how strong you are by trying to swing that thing down and pull it down, or because they do call those branches widow makers for a reason. So if it's still attached to the tree, hanging from the ground and not totally all the way down, use some care. Be safe first. Secondly, I just mostly get it out of the way. In general, trees are very good at walling off infection from those splits and things like that. But if you have torn bark, coming in with a saw or a sharp knife and actually cutting that edge to make a smooth edge there, the plant heals itself up a little better. Was that sort of what you were referring to?
Yeah, that's what I was looking for.
I usually don't like the idea of any of those paints that they used to use, that black wound paint. That does not help the tree at all. Only time I'll use that was when I have to prune an oak in the summer, because you don't want those beetles to get in to a fresh cut on an oak.
Our guest today, Dave Wanninger. David is a horticulturist in charge at the Berner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee County. Great to have him with us, talking about all kinds of things relating to the snow and our plants. We're talking about, we can talk perennials, we can talk about dwarf conifers. There's a broad range of things we can discuss with him. So join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today, Jill Nadeau, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you with us today as we talk about what's going on in the garden, dealing with the snow, getting the garden kind of ready for the winter. Maybe what else can we do yet this year? Hope you'll join in. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You think the perennials, there are going to be any lasting effects from the early cold and snow, Dave? Or
I don't think so. Matter of fact, usually that's the best thing for perennials going into the winter, is to get a nice little blanket of snow on them so they can start chilling out, and they'll have a nice, if we get some really, really cold weather, that snow will protect the crowns of the perennials. I don't think, no problems at all.
What about the tender perennials like roses? Are anything we should be doing there? The snow, should we be protecting them?
Yeah,
the snow on the ground already.
Yeah,
so
the snow actually probably helps the roses. With tender roses, though, it's not so much the snow, but that 19 degrees of weather we got last night, or 18 degrees we got, that sometimes can give you get a lot more dieback. If you get a really nice cold snap where we didn't have a lot of 25 degrees, 28 degrees before that, when it gets cold, that first frost is sort of hard like that. Sometimes we get a little more damage on something like a rose that usually dies back.
Yeah. So don't do anything. We just leave it.
Leave it right now. Yep. And wait for spring and you cut back to the green.
We have another caller from this one from South Range. Mary, thank you for calling. What's on your mind? I think we lost Mary. Well, we'll try another caller here. Let's go to Phil in Green Bay. Hi, Phil.
Hello. How you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
My question isn't so much to do with perennials or gardens, but more on tree trimming. In particular, I have oak and maple trees that need to have the inside branches kind of trimmed out to thin them out a little bit. How late in the season can a person do that?
You just came to the best time of the year to start pruning trees, in my opinion. Oaks in particular, because there's a disease called oak wilt that's spread by beetles that spread the disease onto fresh cuts, you generally only want to prune an oak when it's dormant, after it loses its leaves in the fall, and before it leaves out in the spring. A lot of times, so pruning right now is actually just fine to do. And for something like a maple, winter pruning is good because it's not going to, it doesn't bleed like it would if you pruned in early spring. So that you avoid that. Also, in the winter, pruning is nice because you're talking about taking out interior branches. This way, the leaves are gone. You can see the architecture much, much better. So you're just coming onto the prime time of the year to be pruning your trees.
And with oaks, definitely, I think there's a suggestion or even a rule almost that you should not trim oaks until after you get a frost and and those darn insects are gone. And then in the spring, if you were going to wait until spring, you'd want to get started before, what, about March?
Yes, I'd say March. And you're 100% right on that. It's so important not to be pruning your oaks during the growing season when they've got leaves.
Yeah. Appreciate that call. Thanks so much. Let's go to Andrea in Wonder Lake, Illinois. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Larry. I have a pine tree that I have babied all summer, and it was doing very well. It's a mature pine tree. Started to turn brown all over, just a little here, a little there. And I went out, and I see neat vertical rows of holes about a quarter of an inch wide, which I believe I have read are from sapsuckers.
Yep.
So my question is, are sapsuckers still around at this time of year? And what should I do and when should I do it?
Sure. Well, with sapsuckers are not the problem here. The problem are the insects that the sapsuckers are after, I think, Dave.
Yeah, and I think trees can I commonly see pines with those holes in them, and the trees can be quite healthy. I think they can deal with a certain amount of sapsucker injury and also insect injury. It might be when you see it, talk about it turning brown. Is it little tufts of brown all over the place, but they're still green like above where the brown is? Is that sort of what you're seeing, those symptoms on that pine tree?
Oh, we lost her.
The reason I ask about that, especially on a kind of pine called white pine, which is one of the more common pines here, it has sort of a slender, very flexible needle to it. White pines every year about this time, they lose the needles from the year before. And so there's brown needles hanging all through the plant. But if you look at each individual twig, at the end of the twig, there's green and all the brown is below that. And so sometimes people sort of, to be honest, freak out a little bit. They think their tree's dying. But with white pines in particular, that's very commonly seen in the fall where you see those brown needles and you wonder if the plant's sick. I'm hoping that is the situation that we were talking about.
Me too. Thanks, Andrea, for calling. Let's take another call. Ann, calling from Maine. Hello, Ann.
I live in Maine, but I'm on I-94 headed east. I'm kind of around Menominee. So my question is, we're building a new home and wanting to move some of the perennials over to the new site, but not ready to plant them in the ground. So we put in some raised beds. And in September, I divided many of my irises and put them in the raised beds, some different perennials. I'm not familiar with preparing raised beds for the wintertime, our climate, much like Wisconsin. So what should I be doing to protect, especially those irises, in the raised beds for wintertime?
Okay.
Well, one thing that's in your favor is usually when you have a raised bed, that a lot of times improves your drainage a little bit. So irises, actually overwintering irises, I've seen more problems with moisture and irises rotting out. So that part's good. I don't think it's much of a problem, although if it's a smallish raised beds or quite tall raised beds, if they're sort of small in diameter or quite tall, it's possible that soil could get colder, faster, easier, and stay colder, faster, easier. So maybe making sure to mulch on top. Other than that, I think you're in good shape.
Yeah. Would you wait until it's frozen to do the mulching? So sometimes they say that.
Yes. It's not an absolute. When I'm doing stuff like roses, I generally like to get the ground frozen first.
Okay.
And that way you just keep the frost in the ground. So I think it's good to get a little frost in the ground before you put your mulch down. Yeah.
Okay. And does that help?
That helps. Thank you much.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Again, you can join us at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Lynn in Spring Green next. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. I live outside of Spring Green in an unusual situation.
and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm in a recovering gravel pit, basically, with a town hall that had was moved and had nothing around it. I'm surrounded by woods, and so I've done some, I'm experimenting. And one of the things that I did was put in a pot this spring, one each of bittersweet and trumpet vine. So I've got a couple perennials, and I, when I heard the weather was coming, I sunk the pots up to about two-thirds to three-quarters of the way. That was as far down as I could dig, and then mounded the soil around them. Is there anything else I should do to help them go into their second year healthily? I didn't trim anything back or anything.
Well, you're pretty smart, if you ask me. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, sounds like you're doing it all the right way. The only thing I'd worry about is both of those plants you listed are pretty rampant growers,
yeah.
And you might have, I hope it's a big pot, because they will overgrow that pot eventually. One other thing I would like to mention is, you did mention bittersweet, and Japanese bittersweet is now actually, I think, on the banned list for the Wisconsin Department of
Natural Resources.
Wisconsin Natural Resources Department. So I would sort of, I might want to check out to see what kind of bittersweet you've got there. The American bittersweet is beautiful and wonderful native plant.
Do you know what you have for a plant? Is it American bittersweet?
Celestris Indian. Can you not hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Celestris.
Celestris Indian. Is that invasive or native?
I don't know. I can't remember my Latin.
I tell you what, you can find out, though. If you go to the DNR website, and there's a listing on the site of plants and that are banned, essentially. And you can find that list on the DNR website probably in a matter of a minute. And it'll tell you, it'll have Latin names and common names.
Yeah. And I would, if you actually bought that at a retail establishment, I would expect that it would not be the banned one, because most all of the retailers in Wisconsin are very hewing very closely to not selling that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I'd check anyway just to be sure, but I think you're going to be okay. Thank you so much. Check it out at the DNR website. Let's go to Lynn next in Spring Green. Hi, Lynn. Lynn, are you there? Nope, we lost Lynn. Well, let's see. Helen in Washburn, are you there?
I am. I bought this old farmhouse with a 10 acres that I am completely remodeling. But the big bonus thing was in among the woods, is a apple orchard, and I have done a lot to the apple orchard, like cut off the tops that are going straight up and hanging things to bring down the branches and all that stuff. But I'd like to take some of these apple trees and grow them and bring them down to Cameron. Now, they are the most delicious apples I have ever tasted. I don't know what they are, but how can I grow them from the seeds or somehow and transplant them down to Cameron?
Well, the one problem you have, you can certainly germinate those seeds and grow new trees from those seeds, and it would take them a while to bear fruit. Unfortunately, these varieties of apples do not come true from seed. So if you had the most delicious apple you ever tasted and you planted those seeds and grew the tree, and 20 years later, you might not have any fruit on it. It might be bad fruit, it might be delicious fruit, but you just don't know. So the way that in the industry and what horticulturists do with a situation like that is they actually cut some of the what they call signwood, the budwood, some stems of that plant, I think they typically do that in June, and they graft it to another apple tree. And so you can, and then that will develop. And so that's the way generally apples are propagated. They're propagated asexually, meaning from cuttings or from grafting instead of seeds. So if you wanted to enjoy that same kind of apple, you'd have to do it by grafting or growing a cutting.
And there are people that can do the grafting, but there's also, I mean, you can do it yourself too if you want to just experiment, right, Dave?
I learned to do it myself, and I don't have a lot of success doing it, but I have enough success that I've done it a bunch of times. And I just did it all on my own, just a sharp knife and the internet.
Yeah, a sharp knife in the internet. There you go, Helen. So give it a try next. Well, don't do it right now.
No, you have to wait. Like I say, June is typically about the time you do that.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. And if you're scared about it, you know, there's people around that are pretty good at it. Maybe in your area, there's a master gardener or somebody else that does that kind of work.
Yeah, excellent idea. That checking with master gardeners is what a wonderful resource they are.
They're wonderful people. Chris in Prairie du Sac, we go to you next. Hi, Chris.
Good morning. I have a very large raspberry patch that grows fervently in the spring and summer, and then I get about 10 berries. And so I'm wondering, is there something I should be doing in the fall to the soil around those wonderful berries? Or I get very excited. I see all these greens and then nothing.
So it grows like crazy, but then you don't get any fruit.
Not much. So I went to the, I thought, well, maybe I just have too much of one kind. So I went and bought some more at the nursery and planted a couple others. And yeah, nothing.
Oh.
I'm not much of an expert on bramble fruits, you know, the berries like that. But I do know that they oftentimes there's different types with different pruning regimens. And again, I'm just not enough of an expert, but I know that some berries you got to prune back hard and some you prune back at a different time. So I don't have enough expertise, to be honest, on that. But I do think that maybe it might be a cultural thing about pruning.
Yeah, it could well be. There's a UW Extension fact sheet, I believe, on pruning raspberries. And if you go to the Learning Store, thelearningstore.uwex.edu, or just type in UW Madison Learning Store, that's going to pop up and you're going to get a look right online. You can make a free copy if you want, and it'll give you the information. Because some you prune right down, others you just take the old canes. It's you're better off to look and make sure what you got. Good luck, Chris. Thank you so much. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Let's go to Joe in Rhinelander. Joe, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call.
Yeah.
Another apple question. Friends and I make a ton of apple cider in the fall, and I just had another fellow approach me earlier this week about coming up to the UP to pick apples off of his orchard. He said he's got millions of them, but we've had several hard frosts. Is there any chance those apples would still be good to make cider as late as next week? And I'll just hear what you have to say off the phone.
Yeah,
that one's out of my wheelhouse. I do not know for certain. Do you have an idea, Larry? Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I don't think that question's ever come up on the show before. I'm not sure. Now, I would expect you could make cider out of, you know, if you had a bag of frozen apples and wanted to make cider, I suppose you could do it. But here he's talking about making a long trip. Joel's talking about making a trip somewhere. If you don't have very far to go, you could try it and just see what happens. I might go online for that. I might just go online and type that in and see what Dr. Google has to say about it.
But, you know, I don't think the apples would be bad. They wouldn't be rotten or anything.
No.
But you might not get much juice out of them, but I think you'd be at least be able to drink it, and I can't see it would be bad. I just don't know, though.
I don't know what happens to the sugar content on apples when they freeze like that. So that is a question that we're going to have to – maybe somebody – you know, there must be other apple growers listening in today. If you're an apple grower and you have an answer to that question, could apples that kind of froze on the tree, could we still make cider out of them if we did it pretty quickly? I hope you'll join in with the answer to that. Or if you have another question, I hope you'll join in for that. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, Or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Jacqueline emailed to ask, is it too late to do any pruning on bushes, or should I wait? She doesn't say what bushes, but doesn't matter, does it?
In general, it's a good time to prune almost any woody plant when they are dormant. One thing I'd keep in mind with any kind of bushes, if it's a bush that has big spring flowers that come on the end of the plant, the classic one there would be lilac. But the spring flowering shrubs with the big showy blooms at the ends of the twigs, those, if you prune them now, you're going to be pruning out all your flowers for next year. So it's just a consideration, not that you're going to harm the plant in any way. But if you do prune now, you might be pruning out some of your flower buds, but perfect time to do it.
Yeah, you know, and like with lilacs, you know, when you get those great big branches, they don't produce a whole lot of lilac anyway for the most part. I'd say, you know, take a third of those, take the biggest ones out and just go from there.
Or even take the whole thing down to the ground, cut it 6 inches down. If it's getting way too big, they call that rejuvenation pruning. And I've seen lilacs come back beautifully from that. Might take 2-3 years to get blooms again. But when it does bloom, it's at a height that you can actually pick them and stick your nose into them.
There you go. Well, Gail emailed. She's got a good story here about tulips. She says, one year at our cottage, we planted, this must have been northern Wisconsin, we planted tulips at Thanksgiving and we used an axe to get into the ground. And they all came up next year.
Yep. I have shoveled snow off. I think I planted tulips in December, as a matter of fact. I don't think I've ever actually planted tulips in frozen ground. But if the axe works for you, yeah, I'd believe that. I'd believe that. Yeah.
Oh, man. I love that story. Thanks a lot for that email. Appreciate it. Well, Norm in Wausau has got something for us. Hi, Norm.
I've grown apples for many years, and what we found is as long as the temperature doesn't drop below 26 degrees and it gets up to freezing or higher the next day, the apples will be perfectly fine in terms of using and keeping or whatever you want to do. If it gets below 26 or it doesn't get above freezing in the next 24 hours or so, then the apples will store poorly, they'll get soft, and you'll get a lot of brown apples. In other words, they no longer are very useful for anything you'd want them for. So 26 seems to be the magic temperature.
All right, Norm. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. And Peter in Rhinelander has something, too, relating to this whole thing. Peter, hello to you.
I grow a lot of apples. I have like 10, 12 trees, and I make wine out of them. And some of them, you actually have to wait till they freeze so that the starch is converted to sugar.
Oh.
And then as long as they haven't turned brown and soft like the previous gentleman said, they're perfectly good to use. In fact, they're actually, you get more juice because the cell structure is broken.
Uh-huh.
You get more juice from them.
All right. See, now, here's David and I learning something every minute. Thank you so much for that,
Peter. Sounds like somebody might be going up to the UP.
Yeah, you aren't kidding. I really appreciate that call. Well, here we got a different call from Phil in Kingston, so let's go there. Hi, Phil.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have what they call a fire bush. I don't know what the botanical name of it is.
Burning
bush.
It was
really damaged from the last winter, so it just had just a little bit of shoots and growth. Some at the bottom, maybe a couple shoots at the top, but like I'd say about 90%, 95% of it is just dead wood. But it's hard to tell where to prune this or how to bring it back to life or how to for this bush, this fire bush, to recover.
Yeah. If you have 90% dieback in it, the only kind of pruning I do would be to what I call basal pruning or rejuvenation pruning. You take it all the way to the ground, and if those roots still have some oomph to them, they will start budding out from the ground, and it will gradually grow. It has those big roots in the ground, so that'll help it. But otherwise, you'll never be able to bring back all that dead wood. That tissue has actually been killed. We had 24 below zero 2 days in a row last winter, and it did do damage to things like burning bush and privet and boxwood. So it's not unusual to have seen that. But again, I think if it's 90% dead, either totally dig it out or cut it to the ground and see how it pops next spring.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one. Good luck, Phil. Thank you. Don in Green Lake County will go to you. Hi, Don.
Good morning. I planted about 5 or 6 years ago a bunch of grapevines along the fence in my back, the backyard area. And every year the things leaf out. They get the little bitty clusters of the flowers on them. And every year they just disappear. The plants look great. Haven't had a grape in 6 years.
So there are no grape. You get the flowers, but then no grapes appear at all?
That's correct.
Yeah, and these were purchased vines, correct?
Flowers. There's a lot of flowers and not one grape.
Yeah, and these were purchased vines, varieties of grapes, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
From a place like Jung.
Right. I do not have, a lot of expertise with small fruits. This, again, might be something to go. I'm sure there's some kind of fact sheet on grape growing.
There's a great one. It's called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin, and it's available at the, if you type in UW Learning Store, that is going to pop up, and then you can search on it, and you'll find it very quickly. Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. It's not. I mean, is there a lot of shade there?
Oh, good.
I would say 50-50.
Yeah, grapes like full sun, but yeah. You should be have enough sun to grow
some
grapes. Some grapes, yeah, right.
You'd think you'd be getting some grapes.
Right. Yeah.
Take a look at that fact sheet. I know there's a lot of good information on there on growing grapes, but I don't understand why, unless it's so fertile. I mean, do the vines and do you get just big flushes of growth?
Yes.
Have you fertilized that area?
No, I do not.
Okay. And, well, good. That's good.
This is all kind of old river bank dirt that's come out of the Fox River. Yeah, you grow stuff here, and it grows very well. But my grapes, the plants look great. They're the size of a quarter or bigger around, but no fruit.
Yeah.
Maybe there's some another grape-growing listener that could help us out like that. Those apple guys did, because sounds like if you ran into it, somebody else has run into this before perhaps too.
It wouldn't hurt you to get a soil sample, and now is a great time to get a soil sample because there aren't very many people sending in their samples right now. I would get a sample and I would say the Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory, or just type in soil sampling, and now online they'll give you a picture or a description of how to take the sample, but it's really an easy process. And you tell them what you are growing in that land. They say you're growing grapes, and they will tell you if there's a problem there, maybe too much nitrogen or whatever it might be. And so I would definitely take a soil sample. I'd go online. I'd get a copy of Growing Grapes in Wisconsin at the UW Learning Store and go from there, Don. I know that a soil sample would be interesting for you at this point. And now is really a good time because they don't get a lot of samples right this time of the year. Good luck. Thank you. Barb in Heartland, we'll get to you in just a minute. A reminder here that we're talking today with Dave Wanninger. He's a horticulturist in charge at the Berner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee County. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer today. Jill Nadeau, our producer. And you are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Dave Wanninger, horticulturist in charge at the Berner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee County. Great to have him with us. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Barb in Heartland is up next. Barb, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to mention with regard to the pruning aspect, I think it'd be beneficial and wise if the individual knows precisely what plant they have to actually go online and Google it, because there are several plants that really don't do well with pruning. Many forms of hydrangea do not. Tree peonies cannot be. You don't want to trim a weigela because you're going to cut off all its blooms. Like, as was mentioned, some, you know, the lilacs. So spirea and potentilla, definitely you can trim those back. Dogwoods, yes. But there are a number that you don't want to trim.
Yeah.
Because you'll ruin the spring bloom. And so I would use caution in doing that. Commonly, everybody uses, you know, the, you know, your little potentillas and spireas and those things. But if you have, particularly hydrangeas, you know, you don't want to touch oak leaf hydrangeas or tree peonies because you'll ruin them.
Well, you take the flowers out, and the plant will survive, but people grow those plants for the flowers. I totally understand what you're saying. Yeah.
Right. So that was just a cautionary note.
Yeah, but good. Thank you very much, but Barb. Yeah, and it's kind of what you were talking about, I think, Dave.
Yeah, and again, you're not going to hurt the plant per se, but you're going to be sacrificing the flowers for a year. And if the reason you're growing that plant is the flowers, let's say tree peony, it's sort of a shame, sort of a crime to take off those beautiful, beautiful flower buds.
Yeah, absolutely.
One little category of plant that you have to be very careful about not pruning going into the winter, and that is some of these sort of semi-woody plants. Butterfly bush would probably be the poster child, and then Russian sage would be another one. So often, if you prune these things back, they don't come back very good. You cut them back halfway, and then they just come back from the base or just die. It seems that some of these sort of half woody plants, like the ones I was saying, Russian sage and butterfly bush, we at the gardens just let them sit all through the winter and then wait to see the green growth come out in the spring, and we prune back to that height. That's one plant. Those are two plants we never prune going into the winter.
Yeah, good points. Thanks again, Barb. Let's go to Craig in Dubuque, Iowa next. Hi, Craig.
Hey, thanks, guys, for taking my call. I appreciate it. I'm actually from the Fox Valley, going back to the Fox Valley from Austin, Texas. But my question is, with burning bush, I have rabbits that love those little puppies, and besides trying to eliminate them or putting like a fence or something around them, is there something else I can do with that?
Get a cat? I don't know. Burning bush is quite tasty to rabbits. I've noticed that before. Once they age, once they get some size on them, then the rabbits do not try to girdle those twigs towards the base of the plant. So to be honest, a physical barrier is the only thing I can think of right now. You could try. There are some products on the market that act as repellents. And there's
they contain capsaicin. Right?
Yes, right.
They're hot.
And so it's a possibility. The trouble we found at the gardens when we use that stuff, it only tends to last a couple of weeks. As soon as you get a rainstorm or two rainstorms, you know, it's something you have to keep reapplying. So the rabbits usually end up getting you down the line. I think a fence, to be honest, might be your very best. We use physical barriers at the gardens for stuff like that.
Yeah, and if you don't want to do the fence, then I go for some of those repellents, but just know that you're going to have to keep applying or reapplying. I don't know if they work in the winter. I assume they would. They'd probably hang on.
I think they do. But again, I think snow and things like that tend to wear them off. I think the repellents do. And that is actually when you have some of your worst damage in the winter. Animals are going for that survival food. The voles and the rabbits are eating the bark.
Yeah.
That's the worst time of the year for them.
Yeah. There you go, Craig. Thank you so much. Maria on Washington Island, your turn.
Hi, Larry. It's a wonderful show as always.
Thank you.
I had a question, and maybe that woman, previous caller on hydrangeas. I've heard both things, to trim them down before winter sets in, and then that woman was saying, no, leave them until, I don't know, you trim them back in the spring then?
Yeah. There's the thing with hydrangeas, there's about four or five species of hydrangeas that we grow, and hydrangeas are super popular these days. For the old-fashioned hydrangeas, like those white ones, Grandiflora, often known as Annabelle. That's it, Annabelle hydrangea, probably one of the most commonly grown plants. They have the big white puffballs on them. That is a really good one to prune down hard, either partway or all the way to the ground. They come back because they flower on the new buds of the year. However, those kind of hydrangeas that'll have some of the same kind of puffball flowers, but they're bright pink or bright blue, those are Grandiflora hydrangeas, and they throw their flowers on buds that they make the year before. So if you cut them back, you're cutting off all of your flowers. So there's a couple different kinds. So panicle hydrangeas, Annabelle hydrangeas you can cut down, but big leaf hydrangeas and oak leaf hydrangeas, you can't. So you got to learn what kind of hydrangea you have. You treat those both types of hydrangeas totally differently.
Quite differently. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. There you go, Maria. Do a little checking and see what you got there. Janet in Sussex, your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I have a lemony lace hydrangea, elderberry, and it comes up beautifully every year, and you know, by the end of June it's fabulous, and then it begins to wilt from the tips, and the wilt gets worse and worse, and the plant literally shrinks so that by the end of August it's about 1 foot tall and it looks like it's dying. And I always give up, but then next spring same thing starts. It comes back and it's beautiful in June and it's 3 or 4 feet tall and across. Why is it wilting every year? It's like some sort of a wilt disease or something.
Yeah, does it get brown and crispy, or does it actually just truly wilt, like it, you know, collapses?
It wilts. It collapses. It kind of just collapses, and starting from the tips. It never gets crispy, and I make sure to keep it watered.
Okay.
I don't know if it doesn't like its location. Now, I have a black lace elderberry that is just gorgeous. This lemony lace, it seems so fragile.
Yeah. Do those two grow right next to each other?
No, they're nowhere near each other.
Yeah, so there could be something going on there. That's one that's tough to do. I think what you should do next year when that happens is take some good photos and send them via, you know, electronically to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. Brian Huddleston is there. They call him Dr. Death. But he looks at things like that, and he may well be able to tell you right off the bat. He's really fast about responding. And he may say, well, send me a sample. But he might be able to tell just from the looks, if you get a sort of an overall picture and then some close-ups of the what's going on with the leaves, he may be able to help you out there. It's pretty tough to figure that one out over the phone. But with a good photo, he would probably be able to help you. So it's the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, UW. You write that in, and it's going to pop up on the website. And make a note of that now so you remember to do it next year. And I just do it. Leave them alone and see what happens next year. And maybe, you know, all the wet and everything we had during the seasons the last few years, it's no wonder that there's been a lot of disease problems with plants. And he may well have a good answer for you. So good luck. Thank you. Let's see. Jeremy and Racine. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
For the gentleman with the burning bushes, I had an epic battle for two seasons with rabbits on these new bushes I bought for my wife. And ultimately, what made it difficult is every time they would chew them up, it's like topping the plant, so there'd be new shoots coming out, and they just get wider and wider. So it was really difficult, but you got to cover them up. And when the spring comes, just let the spring thaw really kick in before you take the covers off the bushes, because even though it's gone, the rabbits will still try and tear it all up. You got to wait for a little bit more foliage to start greening up around the houses and around the neighborhood. And then they have just other food sources. And finally, I think I removed mine this year almost in June.
And you use, and you're in Racine, and you waited till June. Yes. And so the, and you use what, burlap bags?
Yeah, I used burlap on one, and then some of them were narrow enough where I used the styrofoam.
Oh,
so kind of had that little greenhouse effect going on in the spring and in the winter. So you know, it allowed it to start getting new growth. So when I took it off in June, there was plenty of new shoots coming out, and by then the rabbits were eating on other things that are running around.
Makes good sense. Thanks.
Yeah, it's that physical barrier again. That's, I think that's the safest way to try to protect from rabbits and voles and things like that.
Yeah, appreciate it. Nick in Madison, you got a quick one for us?
About the burning bush and other very sensitive vegetation to keep the rabbits off, not the cat, but the cat fur. I'll brush the cat and just put the fur outside, and it works good enough to even keep them off my tulips in the spring.
Yeah, and you know, that is a very good idea. You know, the fur, it blows away and everything else, but it's, if you got two cats like I have, there's mm-hmm. never a shortage of fur.
Well, you just got to keep up with it over and over again. And actually, I do know a gardener who goes and collects hair from a local barber and spreads that hair through their garden for the exact same reason.
Oh.
Apparently, even human hair scares away. The smell is not good for rabbits.
For rabbits. Oh, thank you so much, Nick, for calling. Appreciate your call. Dave Wanniger is a horticulturist. He's in charge at the Berner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Welcome to Garden Talk. Great to have you with us today. Larry Mueller here. So fun to be talking with our guest today, Dave Wanniger. He's the horticulturist in charge at the Berner Botanical Gardens. He's going to talk about the recent snow and cold. And, you know, we've been talking about that a bit. And certainly answering your gardening questions. So, boy, we've got open lines for you. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or go ahead and email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. And some callers, let's go to Walter in Chicago next. Walter, hi, thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call. What's on your mind today?
Well, I got this forsythia bush in my backyard. Ordinarily in the summertime, I'll kind of trim it back here and there, kind of keep it in check. But this summer, the thing just, I didn't have a whole lot of time to work out in the yard. And so the thing kind of went crazy, and it, you know, branches all over the place and just went nuts. And we just had our first snow here in Chicago yesterday. I want to know how much I can cut that thing back now that it's already, you know, we've had the freeze, we've had the snow and all that. How much can I cut it back without harming it too much and without and still being able to get the blooms in the springtime?
Yeah, and the nice thing about forsythia as opposed to a lilac, it's a spring flowering plant, and those, you're right, any buds you cut off, flower buds you cut off, will result in less flowers the next year. But the good news about a forsythia, like a weigela, it flowers all up and down the stem. So if you just take some of your stems back a third of the way or halfway or two-thirds of the way for that matter, you'll be just fine. So this is a good time of the year to prune. I'd say you just take it to whatever size you want, and you still will have at least some flowers on it the next year. Again, flowers, it tends to flower more higher up on the stems, but those flowers will go all the way down the stems too. So you're going to be taking out maybe, you know, a bunch of your flowers, but you'll still have something left for next year.
There you go. Thank you so much. We had an email from Will, I believe. He emailed to say that he used to have cocoa bean shells and loved using them, but his wife hated them.
they'd occasionally get blown around by the lawnmower and they'd lose their dark color over time. So he switched to a rubber mulch. He hasn't seen any rubber mulch at the garden. Do you have any opinion on rubber mulch?
Well, I don't think it's dangerous or anything, and it certainly will last a lot longer. But I don't know. I'm the kind of guy who likes to have like things that will rot in your garden. If I want to put down a mulch, I want a mulch that will actually help help the soil, help build the soil. I sort of worry a little bit long term about having that rubber mulch and, you know, in the interaction with the soil. How is it going to work with the soil together? I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but again, I try to stay away. I personally stay away from something that is not, you know, sort of organic, sort of natural, right? More natural than that. Yeah. Again, I've seen it used in commercial sites, in cities sometimes, a lot of times for safety reasons and stuff. But again, I don't think it'll hurt anything, but I want something that'll actually build my soil.
Yeah. And everything else builds the soil. And there is a word of caution on the cocoa husks as well, because The cats and dogs both can find those toxic, because essentially cocoa, it's chocolate. You definitely don't want your dog or your cat eating it, or the neighbor's dog or cat to be eating it either. So I'd find some other mulches. And there are lots of good mulches out there that you could use. So there you go. Connie and Madison, your turn. Hi, Connie.
Hi. Hi there. I just planted a Spiralis hinoki cypress, a chamocyparis, and it was listed as zone 5. I know I took a chance, and I spent actually quite a bit on this little 12-inch object, this plant. It's on an east-facing side of my house, so it gets morning light and then is in much lower light the rest of the day. What should I do, if anything, to protect it during the winter? Should I put up some sort of a burlap curtain around it with posts, or what do you suggest, if anything?
Yeah, this is something that I actually have several of those plants in my yard in Milwaukee. Where do you live, can I ask?
In Madison, on the east side of
okay.
the Isthmus.
Yeah, so, okay, yeah. If in an urban area like that, east side of the house is about the perfect spot for it. My only thing is I don't want to plant those late in the season, because you want to get those roots in there. But once it's planted and it's in there, I think you're in a great location. We got to sort of hope that we don't get another one of those winters with the 224 below zero things, because that first year, the first maybe 2 years, the plants are not as rooted in, and they tend to have some problems making it through the really cold winters. But it's a little you're skirting the boundaries in terms of hardiness, but I think you're just fine. Again, I've got three or four of them in my yard in Milwaukee, and I love them dearly. And I
you don't do anything?
Nope. Haven't killed one for about 10 years. We had a winter about 8-10 years ago that got one of them, but no, I do nothing to them.
There you go, Connie. Thank you so much for calling. Let's go farther north, to way north, to Mary in Bayfield County. Hi, Mary.
Can you hear me?
Yes, yep. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I live on about 100 acres in Bayfield County, and we had an old barn go down about 10 years ago, and on the spot where the barn was, it's almost all tansy weed. We have tansy weed on other areas on the property, too, but I'm mostly concerned about that one patch. And wondering, and don't want to use Roundup, so wondering how effective is it to cover it up with, if I could find large enough black tarps and put them down with some 2x4s for a couple years, would that kill it?
I've heard of that being done with great success. I'm not positive. Some perennials, if it's a really big patch, for instance, of a Canadian thistle, I've heard of real problems trying to do that, just because they're such aggressive growers and they've got such big root systems down below. But I'm thinking that you should that's definitely worth a shot. I think that would certainly work. The principle is, you know, it's a good principle. And, you know, organic growers have been doing that kind of stuff for years and years and years. I think it makes sense to me. What do you think, Larry?
I think it would work, and 2 years is a good idea as well. I think 2 years, Mary, would be
Great. And you kind of have to keep your eyes peeled for rips and tears. You got to, because it'll come right through the rip or the tear. But the black plastic, heavy duty black plastic, should, 2 years, it should get rid of them. And watch around the edges. Watch around the edges and make sure you got to be you got to be really vigilant.
Yeah, and black plastic is the way to go over clear plastic, because that black will actually help collect the sun's rays in it. And actually, they call it solarization, which actually helps kills the crowns of the perennials just with heat as much as anything.
Thank you again. Let's go to Deb in Menominee next. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is about peonies. My soil is clay loam, and everything grows really profusely. I have about 6 peonies in about a 7 by 7 foot area. It gets full sun throughout the summer. But sometimes they'll bloom. This year, 4 of them bloomed and 2 of them did not. And the leaves get this black, spotty look on them. So I'm wondering, do I have them planted maybe too close together? Do they need more air circulation, or any suggestions?
Well, yeah, I'm a peony lover. That black, that black, it's a fungal disease. Sometimes it's called measles. Comes later in the season after flowering. And the way we tend to do our get our best control with it in our garden, at our peony garden, is by just making sure to clean up all the foliage as careful as possible. It tends to get spread from last year's foliage. So that's one thing that we've found, that it really helps, just that just making sure to do real good fall cleanup on your peonies. Having 6 plants in a 7 by 7 area does sound like they're a little crowded.
Yeah.
And airflow would help in terms of getting less of that disease. Having more airflow keeps that black measles from coming up on the leaves. The thing about the flowering, though, everything sounds perfect. Your soil sounds good. You got good sun. And I'm not quite sure why you'd have problems with those. If the peonies, it's possible they're just not good plants, you know, that they're not a good variety or something. But I'm not sure to think of what else. Usually peonies are pretty as long as they get some sun and, you know.
Yeah, I think one of the problems we've had is pretty much across the state, it's been wet. We had some wet conditions the last couple of years. And I think couldn't that have contributed, Dave, to...
Oh, for disease, for foliage disease? Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. But again, it's more of cleaning up after them. I've never sprayed fungicides on my peonies in all the years I've been growing them.
Yeah. So there you go, Deb. Does that help?
Yeah, it helps immensely. I think I'm going to probably transplant them, though, and get them in a little bit more air circulation next spring.
Yeah, okay. So. That's a good idea.
By the way, do not unfortunately, the time to transplant a peony, they don't transplant well in the spring. It's one of the few that don't. Anytime after about August 15th through about October 15th is the best time to transplant peonies.
All right. There we go. Keep that in your mind as well. Let's go to Linda in Sheboygan next. Hi, Linda.
Hi. I bought a small hydrangea at the grocery store.
Yep.
And it's in my house and sitting in the sunlight. What can I do to keep it healthy over the winter until I can plant it outside?
Okay.
Next year?
This was from the floral department at the grocery store, correct?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what color flowers does it have? And what are the flowers shaped like?
They were blue, shaped like, but I don't have it in front of me and I can't look at it.
I have a pretty good idea what it is. It's a big leaf. It's what they call a big leaf hydrangea, which is those kind of hydrangeas that Martha Stewart grows out on Cape Cod or wherever she lives, and they get monstrous and gorgeous and bright blue. We have trouble growing those here. They're not quite as hardy as they should be for here. However, my next-door neighbor, Mary, did exactly what you're talking about. She had a hydrangea that she got at a grocery store or something like that, and she just overwintered it by, you know, keeping it alive in the window, and then she just planted it in the spring, and she gets some flowers some years on hers. Usually it doesn't flower, but a couple of years ago, she had really nice flowers on it. So chances are it won't perform that well for you in the garden. But hey, it's worth a shot.
Yeah.
And it's something that, you know, it means something to you. And you means, you know, if you can save it, give it a shot.
Yeah, why not? I would. It, you know, we're gardeners, experimenters. Yeah. We'll try anything.
Hey, keep in mind, the more stuff you kill, the better gardener you become.
There you go, Linda. Oh, boy. Robin in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Robin.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about burning bushes and hardy hibiscus.
Okay.
I live in a neighborhood residential that has lots of burning bushes. And in the fall, everybody's turns this beautiful red, and mine just goes from green to brown.
No.
And I'm trying to figure out what is wrong.
So when it goes to brown, do the leaves dry up, or are they just turn brown and they look healthy, but they're brown?
They dry up.
Oh, they dry up.
They dry up.
Okay.
Yeah, and then the first good winter winds, they just blow off and it's then naked.
Yeah, did you ever get good fall color on this plant that you know of? Because I think some burning bushes just don't burn very well. You know, you might just have sort of a dud fall color one. I don't know that for a fact.
Okay.
The other thing is if they're in too much shade, they can have problems coloring up. Those are the only two times. I mean, I've seen individual burning bushes just not color very well, and then ones in too much shade. Those are the two main kind of problem areas, I think, for burning bush. You were talking about hardy hibiscus, though. Was there something about those?
Yes. I bought a hardy hibiscus and was told that the best place to plant it would be on the east side of my house, and that's not possible.
Okay.
So I planted it on the west side, but it's protected by a pine tree and red twig dogwood.
Okay.
And I've read two different things about how to winterize it. One says heavy mulch and cover it like with burlap, and another one says cut it down to 12 inches and then mulch it. And
we have quite a few of them at the gardens, at the botanical gardens, and we do no winter protection on them at all. And then what we will do is when we had that tough winter last year, some of ours, like one that was next to the building, didn't have any dieback. Most of them had some dieback. We just waited to see where the green popped the next spring, and then we just pruned them back to that spot. One nice thing is they're pretty fast growers, so you should be able to get them to grow back. But like I say, I don't think I'd really necessarily do any winter protection. Maybe a little mounding, a little mulch around the base of the plant. We certainly can have bad dieback in a tough winter, but especially with global warming, most years they come through pretty good.
All right. There we go. Thank you, Robin. Appreciate it. Anne in Madison has something for us.
Hi. I have another hydrangea question.
Okay.
Now, this is a woody bush. It's got large conical flowers. I'm not positive what you call it, what type it is. But it is at the base, it's starting to rot out somewhat. The rest of the bush is healthy, but I'm wondering if there's some way I can protect that.
When you say rot out, what do you notice? What is, you know, the symptoms that you're noticing to make it rot? That makes it rot.
It's open. And it's a little bit hollow down there.
Oh, okay. I'm pretty sure the plant you have is called a panicle hydrangea, which is one of those hydrangeas that flowers on the new wood of the year. So it's something that can be pruned down hard. The flowers come out in mid to late summer, and then they start out white, and they usually age to pinkish, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's panicle hydrangea. I don't know. It's an, you know, older one like that. You probably have some kind of rot in at the base there. There's nothing generally that I can do to try to heal something like that. Plants are very good at walling. Woody plants are very good at walling off infections. I probably would take no action on that rotting area. One nice thing is if one stem goes bad on those kind of plants, unless it's a really old tree form one, a lot of times you just get new shoots come up the next year. If you lose one of the major stems, new shoots just come to recover. So I don't know if I'd do anything.
No, I wouldn't do anything. I certainly wouldn't paint it or anything
like
that.
Yeah, right. But I don't think it's necessarily a goner. I think that the plant could be just fine over time.
All right. So hang in there, Ann. Well, let's wait and see what happens. Ted in Lone Rock. Hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm having a tremendous mold infestation problem.
Moles.
Moles. And I'm new to living in the country. My wife and I just retired to outside Lone Rock in the Pines area. And, you know, I've asked a lot of people, and I bought those Sonic things. They don't seem to do much vibration-wise. And then somebody suggested I get a certain fertilizer that would kill off the grubs. So I've done, you know, I've had roughly an acre and a half. And killing off the grubs was supposed to help them move to another yard because you can't feed them. But that didn't seem to work. It's a real problem. And now with the snow, who knows what's going to happen. But
Are these the – do you see tunnels? Is that what you see in your lawn? Do you see these long kind of raised – sorry?
Yeah, and they're all over the place.
Yeah.
On my property. It looks like that famous picture of all the highways converging in the L.A. area.
Well, I can tell you right now that a couple of moles can make it look like there's 20 out there. So there may not be as many as you think. Have you tried? There's a couple of ways you can do it. I don't know what you do, Dave. There's traps that you can set in the tunnels that you can tell are working tunnels. There are traps that look awful, but they will eliminate the mole if you use them properly. There's something called Mole Med. Did you try that?
No.
That's another material that is a repellent type material, and there are some pellets, pill form things that you can put in the tunnels themselves that are essentially a poison. You open the tunnel up a little bit, you put the pill in, and then you close it back up, and they're supposedly attracted to molds are attracted to them. So that's another way that you can, give it a go. But I can tell you that a lot of two or three moles can make it look like you've got 50. They make a lot of tunnels, but not much you can do right now.
Yeah, you did get good advice about putting down the fertilizer that had the insecticide in it, because that very commonly does help quite a bit with moles and turf. So that was a good thing to do. But Larry, I think that your idea is some kind of physical, actually trapping or some kind of poison might be your only the other options.
Yeah, that I think is about all you can do, and we've done just about all we can do here. Dave, I tell you what, it's been such a pleasure to talk with you today. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but we never do when it comes to Garden Talk. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope we have a chance to do this again. You got to come back and be with me.
I hope so, too. I had a gas doing this, and yeah, let's make a date again.
All right, we'll do that. Dave Wattiger, horticulturist in charge at the Berner Botanical Gardens in Milwaukee. Big thanks to him. Big thanks to Malik Anderson, who is our on-air producer today. Again, Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, another of our producers. We will, and we're thank you to the Milwaukee staff here at our Milwaukee studios for doing such a great job with us. Melinda Meyer is up next week on Garden Talk. In the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store here.